Second part and final of session 99. Let's dive here into more archetypical mind, this time the transformation of the mind. Let's begin. In the last session, we cover again personal material that is included not only in this session, but in the next sessions a lot. I think actually we have two more sessions in which they discuss, let's say, real material, meaning law of one material, and the rest are just going to be personal material as we approach the end of the sessions. So it's kind of interesting that around the session 40s, 45s, 44, around there was one or two sessions that were fully personal material, and that was it. And now towards the end is when we get these sessions again, where when things start to get a little bit more worried, and as the ending, in essence, of the contact started, the beginning of the end started. We get more of this personal material. In any case, we're going to cover strictly material for the archetypical mind here, and I have no introduction, nothing to say, but hope you remember from the past. As always, I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible. Even if you don't study the archetypical mind or the law of one, well, it's still going to be difficult, but I want to try to make it as easy as possible. Because at this point, there's a lot of concepts to remember and to keep in mind. But the things that are reflected here are things that we can all relate to, especially if we're on this path. So again, it may sound complicated, may sound complex, but I'm going to try to make it as relatable as possible. Okay. So now we move into the first question that I have here to begin. That's question 6, where Don says, "We now have an additional set of tarot images. We will refer to them as the Royal Road images, since that's the name of the book they came from. They are similar to, but in some instances different from, the C.C. Zane images, which of these two sets are closer to Ra's original intention, and if they are mixed, let me know that." So Don is going again for this search for the perfect images, or less distorted. And Ra, once again, is going to say something interesting. They say, "The principle which moves in accordance with the dynamics of teach learning with most efficiency is constancy. We could explore the archetypical mind using that set of images produced by the one known as Fathman, or we could use those which have been used in the past," they mean. "In point of fact, those which are being used have some subtleties which enrich the questioning. As we have said, this set of images is not that which we gave. This is not material. We could use any of a multitude of devised tarot sets, although this must be at the discretion of the questionnaire. We suggest the maintaining of one and only one set of distorted images to be used for the querying, and note that the images you now use are good." So here is the clear point. Don, in his search for the perfect or less distorted, which again is a very noble pursuit, but you know, it's like when you're asking the teacher over and over again for the same question and in different versions of it, and you're not seeing the central message of it, which is understandable. We all do this. But we see here the reflection of that, saying, stop worrying too much about the perfect images. Now, of course, there's a reason why Don was doing this too, and he'll explain it, but mostly it was a search for the perfect images. Let me put it this way. I think Ra could have said that they could explain the archetypical mind even without any cards, right? I mean, they transmitted it without any cards. They didn't give images. The images were drawn afterwards, after the explanation, because that's what depicted it for the Egyptians, and that's fine. So I'm sure that Ra could agree and say that, yeah, we can study the archetypical mind with anything. You know, just like in Zen, we say that we can teach Zen with any book. We don't need a specific book that explains Zen. You know, any book can be used to explain Zen, because it's there. You know, it's an active thing. It's right now. It's reality. So anything that is real can explain reality. But yeah, in the search for something that is, I guess, closer to what they were using, and if they want to go very academic, then I guess they have their suggestions, which is, you know, just let's keep using the ones that we use. I think I had an extra point here. No, I think that's it. We can use any tarot set, they say, and that's fine. But okay. Here's one of the problems, though, that Don explains, and this will lead into the main question that we have for this session, I think, which is the transformation of the mind. Don says in question 7, the only problem is something that I am sure is quite foreign to Ra's way of thinking, which is called copyright laws. We have been unable to get copyright privileges from the publishers of the cards that we started with, and we'll have to circumnavigate that problem some way or another, which could conceivably cause us to use a different set of images as we go along. So, again, I think, I don't know what was their thinking. There's more to this Q&A, of course. There's the question itself that I haven't read, but just to finish this point, I'm not sure what they did in the end. I think the most reasonable thing would have been to use the cards that they were using for studying, and then at the end redraw them based on what Ra gave, because Ra gave instructions, you know, remove this, take this out, this represents this more, and so on. They could have done that. I don't know why or what happened and what they ended up using. I don't remember from the reading of the book, but that may have been a reasonable way to circumnavigate the problem, you know, not use the specific cards, but just redraw them. That's what people do with the tarot sets, don't they? And again, the thing is that all of these elements are present in our experience, and we can explore them, and yeah, we can just draw any image that we want, right? So maybe there was too much rigidity, which, you know, we tend to have. I have a lot of rigidity, and I can relate to that. But this is a call, you know, for whenever we have this this stance on something, maybe, you know, just soften a little bit, and you'll find other ways. Alright, so let's go to the actual question for question 7. Don says, the wings of card 5, I am guessing, have to do with a protection over the... They are above the significator of the mind, and I am guessing they are a symbol of protection. Is this in any way correct? Ra says, let us say that you are not incorrect, but rather less than correct. The significator owns a covenant with the spirit, which it shall, in some cases, manifest through the thought and action of the adept. If there is protection in a promise, then you have chosen the correct sound vibration, for the outstretched wings of spirit, high above manifestation, yet draw the cage mind onward. So, my mistake, this was actually significator information, and the significator... we talked about in the previous sessions. I forget already. But okay, the significator has, the card itself has wings on top. There's a winged, no, they're just wings on top. And so Dawn thinks or says it's protection. Now, is that the right word to use here? What's happening here? They signify the spirit, right? The significator owns a covenant with the spirit. And I think that's what it signifies, right? We always see the spirit as a bird or wings because they represent freedom or taking flight out of, you know, the constricted mind or the structure mind. That's what spirit represents. And the significator, I guess, is connected with the other significators of body and spirit, and there is a specific connection with the spirit because that's what's driving the significator to move onward, as Ra says. And notice how they say they draw the cage mind onward. So is that protection? I guess it depends on how you see it. Is that a promise, like they say? Maybe. I see it more as a direct connection. You know, is there protection and connection? Sure. Is there a promise and connection? Maybe. It's just inexorably linked to the mind, or the mind to the spirit, in that specific aspect of the archetypical mind. So that's what I see, at least. It means that no matter what the significator is becoming, it has spirit. You see, the significator is the becoming. That's what we could call the significator, is the becoming of being. You see how it's not being itself? It's the becoming of being, or the becoming of the Fool, the card 22 or 0. The choice, free will, intelligent infinity. So that becoming has a direct link with spirit. It's always guided, protected, surrounded by. I guess all these words are helpful. In any case, just to know that whatever the significator is becoming, it is within spirit. See, you can't get out of that. There is no separation. There was never an initial separation. There will never be a separation. And that's, to me, what these wings represent. But then again, I'm not a dedicated student of the Tarot, so take my words with a grain of salt. Okay, now, as I promise, we have a long answer here, and we'll go bit by bit in this Q&A, this question 8. Dawn says, thank you. Card number 6 I see as the transformation of the mind, the male's crossed arm representing transformation. Transformation being possible either toward the left or the right-hand path, the path being beckoned or led by the female, the potentiator. He continues and says, the one on the right having the serpent of wisdom at the brow and being fully clothed, the one on the left having less clothing and indicating that the matrix or potentiator would be more concerned and attracted to the physical illusion as the left-hand path is chosen, and more concerned and attracted to the mental and or to the mental as the right-hand path is chosen. The creature above points an arrow at the left-hand path, indicating that if this path is chosen, the chips, shall we say, will fall where they may, the path being unprotected as far as the random activity of catalyst, and the intellectual abilities of the chooser of that path would be the main guardian rather than a designed or built in protection by the logos for the right-hand path. Finally, he says, the entity fire in the arrow, being what seems to be a second density entity, would indicate that this catalyst could be produced by a lesser evolved source, you might say. Would Ra comment on these observations of card 6, the transformation of the mind? How about if I make comments on Duns, because I feel compelled to do it, and then we get into Ra so everything can be refined. Okay, so I think this is the deepest we get into the transformation of the mind. I could be wrong. Maybe there's a little bit more in further sessions, but let's work with what we have. Okay, so the card itself has the... I'm going to put it up here. I haven't put cards up here in a while, so... we have... this is the conscious mind, so... The conscious mind is with his hands, or its hands, well, it's a he, and it's in this way. So Don observes, and I think that's obviously, you know, the purpose of the card, that it's a choice of either left or right hand path. Beautiful, right? He also notices that the females are the potentiator, or the unconscious. Now, it's not like we have two unconscious minds. It's just what kind of use do we make of the unconscious mind that is going to represent either or, not both. Although we can perceive the unconscious mind as both before making a choice. And that's what this is all about. Okay. Don says and notices that the one on the right hand path has a serpent of wisdom at the brow, and she's fully clothed, whereas the other one, he doesn't mention the grapes here, right, but she's a little bit more naked, and she is more enticing as physical illusion, which is the left hand path, and more concerned and attracted to the mental on the right-hand path. So the difference is mind and body, as Don sees it. I don't see it that way, but okay. Then he points out at the creature above, which has a bow and arrow, and he says that it means that the chips shall fall where they may fall. There is no protection, only that which... the intellectual abilities of the chooser of the left-hand path would be the guardian, and not the design protection that was created for the right-hand path. Okay, I guess that's a fair way to see it, better than what I would have guessed. And then the entity fire in the arrow is a second density entity. I won't even... this one is a little bit off, but I guess deserving, much more deserving than what I would have guessed. So that's Don's interpretation. He notices the females, what they have, the unconscious mind is one or either or, represents both, and then the conscious mind is the male who needs to make a choice, and the creature above. That's all we see here. What is Ra going to say about this? Ra says, we shall speak upon several aspects seriatim, which means in sequence. Firstly, let us examine the crossed arms of the male who is to be transformed. What, O student, do you make of the crossing? What see you in this tangle? There is a creative point to be found in this element which was not discussed overmuch by the questionnaire. So, cross. We see a cross again. What does the cross always mean? Sacrifice. You need to sacrifice something. You can see that the arms being this way, the conscious mind cannot go with both. You have to pick one of the gals, one of the girls, one of the chicks. How are you going to choose? If you go in this way, right, it pulls you this way, you're going to turn totally this way, and you're going to give your back to the other. Isn't that interesting? And if you choose this way, then the same thing is going to happen. You cannot hold their hands at the same time. One pulls, you have to leave the other. That's how it works. So that's what I see with the crossing of the arms. Whereas, you know, if he has both like this, then he can, he still has mobility, but in this way, he is, that's the tangle. You know, what seat you in this tangle? That's what I see, that's what I remember, either listening to somebody talk about it or reading it, but it made sense to me. And the crossing, again, it represents the sacrifice. So what's happening here? You need to decide left or right. Which way are you going to interpret your unconscious mind? How are you going to treat it? And there's more to say about this. And they say, let us now observe the evaluation of the two females. The observation that to the left-hand path moves the roughly physical and to the right-hand path the mental has a shallow correctness. There are deeper observations to be made concerning the relationships of the great sea of the unconscious mind to the conscious mind, which may fruitfully be pursued. Remember, O students, that these images are not literal. They haunt rather than explicate. That's an interesting word. Haunt. So I think it is shallow, and this is just my interpretation of it. It's shallow because, yes, it is true that in the path of separation, let's begin with the path of separation, the left-hand path. There is a path in which we are abandoning the idea that we are part of a whole. It's only us, it's only me that is, it's important. But I think that has also a mental aspect. It's not only in the positive side. You don't travel the left-hand path without your mind, right? And without concerns about the mind. You're actually very concerned about the mind. The mind is everything to you. And that's what I see, you know, in terms of, for example, Don is interpreting that the woman being not fully clothed is attracting us to the physical, right? And this is, I'm not going to call it a mistake, but something that I don't agree with many of the interpretations in other traditions, where whether this be, you know, Christianity in its mystical, not even mystical, but the Gnostics, for example, there used to be something against physicality. And a wrong interpretation. I think at the beginning, the Gnostics got it right. But there was a wrong interpretation. Same with Buddhism. There's a wrong interpretation as to, you know, be totally detached from the physical. Why? Why are we detaching ourselves from the physical? Why are we so scared of our senses? And so it's true that if you get so involved in the senses, then you are neglecting a part of you. But if you get too deep into a part of you, you neglect the senses. It's a delicate topic. People are debating still about this. But why do you have to shun away one or the other? Doesn't make sense to me. So again, I think it's a bit shallow too to think that, you know, it's just the physical that needs to be completely connected with the left-hand path. Again, in Gnosticism, I remember listening about this rejection of the body, the rejection of the body, which is true. You need to reject that you as identity are the body. That's what it means. You know, stop identifying with body and mind. You're not that. That's clouding your identity. But that doesn't mean, you know, the body is bad, the mind is bad. You know, they are tools for experience. That's it. It's very simple. But yeah, that's the, it's a common misinterpretation from my point of view of physicality. So yes, there is, I think that's the shallow correctness. Again, it is true that once you are captivated, you are seduced by the senses and the mind included here, because the mind is another sense, isn't it? We are so focused on mind and body, then yeah, you're living a life that is disconnected from your true self. That is true. Does that make it bad? No, it's all about attention. Where does your attention reside? You can be involved, you can have all kinds of activities. As long as you are not attaching to them, that's fine. That's the key thing. So it can get debated and this and that, but it's just philosophy in the end. The point is, where does your happiness reside? Does it reside in impermanent things that are always changing and you feel this roller coaster of emotions of pleasure and pain? Or is it residing always in you? And no matter what happens, that's just experience. And you are experiencing sorrow, you're experiencing joy, you're experiencing sadness, you're experiencing happiness, whatever it may be. But you're not attached to that. That's not the goal. The goal is just to experience from this point of serenity. Okay. What else do they see? There are deeper observations to be made concerning the relationship of the great sea of the unconscious mind to the conscious mind, which may fruitfully be pursued. So what are these relationships? This is another point that I'll make. And I think they'll talk more about this, so it'll make a nice transition into the next paragraph. How are you treating your unconscious mind? Well, first of all, who are you and what is your unconscious mind? Why am I talking about two different yous? Well, you are the conscious mind. How is your conscious mind dealing with that which comes naturally from you? Are you treating it with respect and love and acceptance? In other words, are you accepting yourself, or are you plundering? Are you controlling, or you're trying to dominate what's happening? You, the conscious mind, you are trying to rearrange things as they come through. So manipulation and so on of yourself. See, those are the two things that we do. And we're all familiar with this because we want to either control our reality, or in the end, we want to accept it. There is no middle path here. One of the two. The middle path is indifference, and we know where that leads. The sinkhole of indifference. Okay, so I mean, there's way more that we can say about this relationship, as Ra says, but what else do they say about this? They elaborate and say, many use the trunk and roots of mind as if that portion of mind were a badly used prostituted entity. Then this entity gains from this great storehouse that which is rough, prostituted, and without great virtue. Those who turn to the deep mind, seeing it in the guise of the maiden, go forth to court it. The courtship has nothing of plunder in its semblance and may be protracted. Yet the treasure gained by such careful courtship is great. The right hand and left hand transformations of the mind may be seen to differ by the attitude of the conscious mind towards its own resources as well as the resources of other selves. So, you see, here is the full explanation of what I just said. How we use the trunk, right? That's the intuition, and the roots of mind, which is the unconscious, and that which flows from all other parts of the mind. How are we dealing with this? Well, if you are aware of your unconscious mind, then you become more accepting. You know that you have no control, that these things are just happening. See, so this attitude towards the unconscious mind, or simply what's happening, everything that's happening is a product of the unconscious mind. The conscious mind is only there to perceive it, right? To notice it, to register it, to record it, to experience it. And so if this conscious mind has been trained to simply observe and You see, when you identify yourself with a conscious mind, and sometimes this message comes through, you say, well, am I just going to sit here and do nothing? Yes, exactly. That is the non-doership that we talk about. Exactly. Oh, but I'm not going to make any decisions. Well, try. Try not to make any decisions. Decisions will be made for you regardless. That is the unconscious mind working. The thing is that you will notice two things. The necessity to control, and that's a decision that you can make, or the feeling of rightness, of what is right to do in the moment. See, these are spontaneous decisions. And you say, well, I didn't do that. Of course you did. It's just that your conscious mind is not, so to speak, clothed in the doer. You see the difference? There is spontaneous reactions and things that we do, and we say, did I decide that? Well, I guess I did. See, but it's different than when you're trying to control and you're making decisions. You're making decisions based on duality. Spontaneous choices are just what is. There is no good in there. There's no bad in there. There's just decision, spontaneous reactions. So that's the difference. Whereas if we get caught in the idea that we're controlling our life, that we're controlling the things that are coming through, then we're entering this, what Ross says, badly used prostituted entity. Because we are trying to select those things that benefit the image that we have about ourselves. Let me rephrase this. When you have a wrong perception of yourself, when you are basing your identity on an image of yourself, then you're going to try to pick and choose those things that simply come from a virgin mind, right? The mind that is trying to express and say, I want this from you and not this. I'm going to repress and put this aside. I'm going to ignore it because it doesn't benefit the image that I'm constructing of myself. That is the key point. You see, that's a prostitution of your unconscious mind. I'm going to use you for my benefit. Whose benefit? The image that you have about yourself, the ego structure. Now, I'm repeating myself here, but I think it's important. As Ross says, the courtship has nothing of plunder in its semblance and may be protracted, yet the treasure gained by such careful courtship is great. In essence, when you sit with your unconscious mind, you have nothing to ask. I'm going to bring this to relationships, romantic relationships, and I'm going to give you advice here too. If you simply sit with your unconscious mind and allow it to be, and have no judgment, have no repression, have no pick and choose, and just simply allow it to be, that is pure acceptance, pure observation, pure love. That is unconditional love. How do we do this in the direct path? Because this is what I teach. You establish yourself as yourself, not as the conscious mind, as who you are. And as you sit there, as you not just sit there, but you bring this out in your day-to-day life, then this will continue to change the perception of life, everything. That's the great treasure that Ra talks about here. It's an unexplainable thing, but it's just harmony in your life because you're allowing this. That's the courtship. I wouldn't even call it courtship, but just giving space and love to that. Now, I love, of course, this relationship that they make, because I have a big affinity for this struggle between, you know, male and female relationships. It doesn't have to be male and female, but just a romantic relationship between two entities. But here is depicted as male and female. And you see, if you love somebody, right, this is my relationship advice, even if you're just meeting somebody and there is some sort of chemistry, make it all about them, you know, without being disingenuous, of course. You want to be as genuine as you want to be, always genuine. but make it about themselves. You know, give them that space. Ask them. Talk to them about the things that they like. You'll see that, of course, there is an inertia in us that we want to talk about the things that we like, and we make it about ourselves. Don't make it about yourself. Have room for them. You know, ask them those things that they never talk about. Get into those details of them without being creepy, of course. Depends on the trust that you have with the person. But yeah, just give them, in essence, you are becoming the conscious meditator for them. You know, that part of them, that's the archetype. You embody that archetype for them, which is they should be able to listen to themselves what you are listening to them. And this not only goes to romantic relationships, but with anybody else, any other relationship. It's just that romantic relationships tends to open a lot more. And so it becomes more intimate for them to be more open to you. And that's a great treasure that you have there. And you can see this happening. Also, you can manipulate and prostitute, which doesn't mean prostitution as we know it, but just, yeah, prostitute or desecrate, I would say, you know, their openness and make use of that. So, beautiful analogies here. The important thing is to know that acceptance or control are the key things in terms of the unconscious mind. Next part. This is a long answer, like I said. Ra says, we now speak of the genie or elemental or mythic figure culturally determined, which sends the arrow to the left-hand transformation. This arrow is not the arrow which kills, but rather that which in its own way protects. Those who choose separation, that being the quality most indicative of the left-hand path, are protected from other selves by a strength and sharpness equivalent to the degree of transformation which the mind has experienced in the negative sense. So now we have the explanation of the archer on top. It's a genie, elemental, or mythic figure. And once again, we can discard it as important in terms of its form and more about its meaning. I'm more interested in the meaning of it. What does that mean to us experientially as opposed to mythical? You know, I love breaking down mythology. So let's get rid, as they said, it's culturally determined. So that's how they saw it, and that's how they represented it, and that's how it stays. But what does it mean? Well, it's not an arrow that kills, but it protects. What? It protects the negatives. Let's get into that. Those who choose separation are protected from other selves by a strength and sharpness equivalent to the degree of transformation which the mind has experienced in the negative sense. Easy. This one is easy. The more negative you become, the more protected you are against the attack of others. So let's talk about the negative path here. I have said when studying, I think it was the experience, right? We were talking about card 4, the archetypical mind, Thoreau said. I said about the experience that there is a sort of defense that we tend to look at when looking at the negative side still, right? I mentioned this a lot in this podcast when I say, stop looking at yourself as if you need to defend yourself from the negatives or the Orion group or whatever you want to call it, demons, genies, whatever. All those things. You need to prepare your defenses. You need to prepare your armor of light. And sometimes, I mean, that's a beautiful way of saying it. Yes, you have an armor of light, but what is that light? That is the positive side. That is the acceptance of all things. And I have to talk about this because Ra is going to mention it. One is that protection, which is not present in the positive, and it is present in the negative. Well, that protection is the, I'm not going to call it paranoia. You know, the more paranoid you are, the more defended you're going to feel against other people and situations and so on. And this creates a sort of keenness to your ability to see when, you know, somebody's going to cheat or do something to you and so on. And so you're always prepared, you're always defending yourself. Gabe, are you saying that I shouldn't protect myself in terms of what others may manipulate me? I'm not saying that at all. That depends on you. It's just how you see that. Do you feel yourself as a victim, as a possible victim all the time? How's that working out for you? Great? Okay. Continue. Not so great? Well, maybe there's something there to look at. So that's the defense, which I talked about. It's not necessary. You don't have to think about yourself as, I need to protect myself. I need to be wary of the things that may happen to me and entities that are trying to manipulate me and control me. And I'm a victim. You know, I'm here and I am, I may die and this may happen. Who is it? Who is the one that is scared and that needs protection? But that's the one, you know, once you travel the negative path, that's what you get. You get protection because you become, yes, very keen. You know, this is why, let me put it this way. We have a great representation of what the negative path is in terms of society and social structure. Kings and royalty in general, they were the most successful villains of the village. They're the ones that were able to beat all their competition in terms of strength, brute strength, and domination, aren't they? That's why they're called kings. You know, they're kings of the nation and so on. Now it's a bit different because we have complexified the negative path into governments and all this network of things behind. But the same principle applies. There is just, you know, we protect ourselves, my interests. They are the ones who are seeking protection and defense all the time because they need to survive. They need to maintain this ego. You see? So they're the ones that live in most fear. They have known fear all their lives and they have used that fear for the benefit of their image, their ego structure. Ah, you see? So take that as an example. Why does the king sit, you know, on a throne with its back against a wall, you know, and surrounded by guards and so on? Because, you know, he's afraid. You know, he doesn't want to be sitting in a crowd outside, you know, and talking to people. Always secluded. They're afraid. Same with the rest of those who are still in power. And I mean real power, not puppeteers. Puppeteers, not puppets. All right, enough talk about the left-hand path. Let's talk a little bit about the right-hand path. Ra says, these upon the right-hand path have no such protection against other selves. For upon that path, the Dodhi seeker shall find many mirrors for reflection in each other self it encounters. Huh. So we don't have this protection, like I said, in the right-hand path. Why? Because we don't need it. We don't need to be in this character of victim and possible victim, and I need to take care of myself all the time. But rather, other people are mirrors of ourselves. And it's not me as an ego. You know, everybody is a mirror of my ego. That can be, if that's how you see first, that will be. But eventually, as you identify yourself, everybody's still going to be your mirror. And so what will you see? You will see a troubled mind, just like you saw yours, or a clear mind now, like you see yourself. So you may either feel compassion towards others, or joy, celebrated in between two, you know, clear-minded individuals. And that's what we're dealing with. You know, we're either seeing people who are troubled or people who are happy, and so we can share that same happiness with them or bring out this compassion or love for those who are troubled. That is that simple. See, you're going to see that and continue to see it more and more as you travel the right-hand path. Is that a protection? No, it's not a protection against anybody, because you don't need a protection. You don't care. There is no you who needs to be defended. There is no you who needs to be preserved. There is no you who needs to survive. It's another thing that is so present in our society. Yes, it's totally fine and acceptable to take care of yourself and to want longevity, because we want to celebrate this life. But to make it a point to suffer, because this is going to bring me bad health, and I'm not going to do this because I want to survive as long as possible. You have to ask the question, am I doing it because I want to celebrate more this joyful life, or because I'm afraid of dying? I'm afraid of failing. I'm afraid of not succeeding in life, and so on. You have to be honest with yourself. What is it? Why are you doing it? Good question, right? So yeah, bottom line, how you use your unconscious mind is going to determine which path you travel, and which path you travel is going to determine how you see life, and how you see life is how you see yourself. Let's move to the next question. Synchronicity is for everybody. The one and only time we'll see this. 99.9. Don says, in the previous session, you mentioned the use of the 45-minute interval of the tape recorder as a signal for ending the session. Is this still the appropriate time? Ra says, this is, of course, at the discretion of the questionnaire, for this instrument has some transfer energy and remains open, as it has unfailingly done. However, the fragility of the instrument has been more and more appreciated by us. We, in the initial observations, saw the strength and will and overestimated greatly the recuperative abilities of the physical complex of this entity. Therefore, we may say that ending a working at approximately this amount of energy expenditure, that is, some point soon following upon the sound vibration of which you speak, gotta love him, would be appropriate, and insofar as we may determine, may well extend the incarnational amount of your space-time which this instrument shall be able to offer to this contact. So, lots of ways to say that, lots of words to say that I think they overestimated the capacities for Carla recovering from her physical energy deficit. Right, the fragility has been more and more appreciated by us. They overestimated greatly the recuperative abilities of the physical complex. So this was in the last session. I won't get into more details, but every time the cassette ended, it was 45 minutes, so it was a way for them to keep track of, I guess, time. Maybe they didn't have a clock there. I don't know. But yeah, it was a good way to also remind them. And that was about the time that Carla had for physical energies and do the contact, so and that's what they're discussing in this case. Ross said that they had a little bit of transfer energy, and I think Don is going to make one more question, and that'll be the end of it. So again, contact information, nothing really important, at least to the information we have. I've noticed a little failure on my part in this slide, but we'll carry over with this. It's the last two words that are totally out of frame. Okay, so 99.10, Don says, in that case, I will just ask one additional short question as we terminate for this session. May I ask if the logos of this system planned for the mating process as possibly depicted in card 6? I don't know if this is related. By some type of DNA imprinting, as has been studied by our science, many second density creatures seem to have some sort of imprinting that creates a lifetime mating relationship. And I was wondering if this was designed by the logos for that particular mechanism, and if it was also carried into third density. That's the word that doesn't pan out really well there. So, in essence, Don is asking about the if third density entities like us humans have a monogamous imprinting in our DNA, if that's what we have and that's what we should follow. So this will lend into a really good question, which is a topic that we have discussed at least once, maybe twice in this podcast, based on the raw material, where monogamy, is it important? Is it necessary? Is it something that is the way or is not the way? Is it human? Is it inhuman? What do we know about that? What is Ra going to say now? They say, there are some of your second density fauna, or animals, which have instinctually imprinted monogamous mating processes. The third density physical vehicle, which is the basic incarnational tool of manifestation upon your planet, arose from entities thusly imprinted, all the aforesaid being designed by the logos. Ah, so here Ra is saying that first of all second density, not all, some of our second density fauna or animals have an instinctually imprinted monogamous mating process. This means that instinctually they have imprinted themselves just by exposure, right, to the environment and to what the environment brings and to the development of the species in and of itself. And they were moved towards monogamy, okay? And they say the third density physical vehicle that we have an animal body. Remember, we came out from some ape-like creatures, and we evolve self-consciousness. Well, we still have the body, second density body. So we came from dust imprinted with this monogamy. Case closed, right? We have DNA that says that we should be monogamous and no relationships with anybody else, just fix on one. Is that correct? Seems so, right? Well, hold your seat. What is Ra going to say now here? Ah, they say, the free will of third density entities is far stronger than the rather mild carryover from second density DNA encoding, and it is not part of the conscious nature of many of your mind-body-spirit complexes to be monogamous due to the exercise of free will. I'm going to pause here because I want to make this fun. So Ra now is saying, no, we have free will, right? And because free will is stronger than any sort of carryover DNA from second density encoding, it is not part of the conscious nature of many of us to be monogamous due to the exercise of free will. In other words, we have free will and we do whatever we want. So now this is proof that we should not be monogamous. The debate goes on. First, we thought we were monogamous because our DNA says so. But yeah, lo and behold, free will is paramount and it goes over DNA. So we're not supposed to be monogamous, right? That's what Ra is saying. Plot twist. Ra continues and says, however, as has been noted, there are many signposts in the deep mind indicating to the alert adept the more efficient use of catalysts. As we have said, the logos of your peoples has a bias towards kindness. So we have the physical then the mental, and then the spiritual, if I can put it this way. The physical is the encoded DNA imprinted in our species to have a monogamous relationship. This kind of makes sense because once we have somebody, right, it's not easy to find, especially if we talk about thousands of years ago, it wasn't easy to find a relationship, a partner, somebody who can provide, you know, for each other and in this much needed relationship, right? We're humans and we need to be together. We can't just be independent, especially in groups. So it was important to keep this. And we see this in certain animals too, certain species who they live in packs and yet they're monogamous. So we can see this in many of the animals that are out there. That's what Ra is referring to, the imprinted DNA in us. And we definitely carry that over. However, as soon as we got self-awareness, of course we became users of free will, and we can do whatever we want. So we don't have to follow through with the DNA as it wants us. We are the creators. So what do we want? You know, that's the mind now taking over. The physical is there, DNA imprinted and so on. But then the mind takes over and says, I'll do whatever I want. And that will drive my evolution, you see? And so what do we want? And so we can have that. We have that free will to do whatever we want. The however part to me comes with spirituality, because in the spiritual path, you realize that what you want is a more efficient use of catalyst. Now, what does this mean? If I'm going to have a relationship, it's probably much better to have one person who is going to reflect all these things to me. And I'll add an extra one beyond spirituality. But let's stick with spirituality at this point. We see this relationship to be more efficient as if I were to go and reflect myself in 20 different women or men, whatever I decide, you know, that I want to have these different relationships. It's not going to be efficient because I won't have the capacity for trust and improved communication, this energizing of our and synchronous movement of our minds to connect and to have a better reflection of each other. So it is a lot more efficient to have just one relationship. See, the monogamous relationship wins in the end in terms of spirituality. That doesn't mean you can't have, of course, other relationships. Of course you can. But is it efficient? How are you using it? That all depends. So I'm not saying, you know, yes, we're supposed to be monogamous. I'm leaving it very ambiguous here. It depends on your situation, whatever it is. Sometimes the relationship doesn't work after a while and, you know, 20 years, different paths, so be it. That's it. New things will arise. And this is where I go beyond spirituality or spirit. And I'm just going to put all of that away. In the end, all you need is yourself. In the end, you don't need anybody. You don't need 20, 40 different people or one. You need yourself. You're the only one that is needed. And in the end, that's how you're going to end. By yourself. Dead. That's it. Everybody dies alone. Sounds grim, but it's the truth. But a death is just a reunion with everything else. So, not quite alone. But you get my meaning. You know, you're not required to have somebody. You're not. It's not necessary to have somebody or many. So, are we monogamous? That's your free will. What is the most efficient way? Of course, a direct relationship. And in the end, it's only you. It's always been you. Will ever be you. Okay. Let's cover a question that I never cover, which is the last one, but there is some information there that is relevant for the rest of the session that we have. So, question 11, final. Don says, thank you. In closing, I will just ask if there is anything that we can do to make the instrument more comfortable or improve the contacts. Ra says, we note the relative discomfort of this group at this space-time and offer those previous statements made by Ra as possible aids to the regaining of the extraordinary harmony which this group has the capability of experiencing in a stable manner. We find the addition of the swirling waters to be helpful. The appurtenances are conscientiously aligned. And so they say, we encourage the conscious strengthening of those invisible ribbons which fly from the wrists of those who go forward to seek what you call, or may call, the Grail. All is well, my friends. We leave you in the hopes that each may find true colors to fly in that great metaphysical quest, and urge each to urge each other in love, praise, and thanksgiving. I am Ra. We leave you in the love and light of the one infinite creator. Go forth rejoicing in the power and in the peace of the one glorious infinite creator, Adonai. And that puts an end to this session. Okay, yes. So the part where they say that they noticed the discomfort and that they wanted to help them to regain that harmony, that beautiful harmony that they had, of course, has to do with the situation they were living at the moment, with moving and all the personal stress of not communicating and so on. Carla got sick, Jim was frustrated, and Don was beginning to show a bit of a paranoia and uncertainty on things. So this is the disturbance that they were dealing with. And that's what Ra kind of suggested at the end, said, we would like to, you know, give you some indications as to, you know, regaining that harmony. Because it is important. It was important at that time, and they really needed it. Something also for us to keep in mind is just that no matter what's happening, no matter what is going on, if you can just be present and know that harmony lies within and not with experience itself, it doesn't matter if everything is peaceful and calm, I mean externally, it doesn't matter if it's very disturbed, chaotic, or if it's an exciting moment. You know, maybe you're at a festival, music festival, and everybody's happy. Maybe you are, you know, a funeral and a lot of people are crying, or there is conflict, war, whatever is happening around you. Or if, you know, you're in nature, no matter what's happening outside, what's inside is always peaceful and serene. That is the harmony that we seek. And sometimes, yes, it is required. We cannot party. We're supposed to go with the flow of things, and that's fine. But we're not seeking or expecting anything out of the moment. We're just experiencing the moment as it is. If it's sad, it's sad. If it's happy, it's happy. If it's silence, it's silence. And that's how we roll in life. Nothing else to do. What else it is to do? Just to accept what is. So, yeah. Conclusions. Let's go back to the unconscious mind and say that let's acknowledge both things. We both have behaviors that are, we're in this position, right? In a lot of our things, we haven't made the choice yet, and we're at that point where we need to either continue to control or trying to control, which appears and shows in our life ever more difficult as we travel in the positive path, which makes it easier for us to accept. Let me explain this. When we are neophytes, we don't know if we should control or accept, right? And so we control a lot, and a lot of acceptance happens naturally. So we kind of learn, and we are exposed to these two possibilities of controlling or accepting. But as we travel one path consciously, more and more, then the choice is easier for us to make. Acceptance, in this case. And control, those things that we still have that we want to control, they're going to become more difficult. In other words, they're going to become so much more visible to our lives and our decisions that we're going to feel a lot more disturbed by the presence of the need for control, you see? So, what is recommended? Become aware of those things that in your mind are still wanting to control. This can be thoughts, this can be actions, this can be expressions that you still are, things that you're doing and wanting to order in your life that elicit some sort of control. Well, pay attention to what's happening in the mind. Look at that. And then, of course, look at how easy it is to accept. This is the best way I can describe this process, which is, once again, we're dealing with the unconscious mind. That is meditation. Or meditation at least opens up a lot the possibility of seeing the landscape of the unconscious mind, what it's trying to do, and how the conscious mind is trying to control it. Either court the unconscious mind or prostitute it. The results, of course, are the two paths that we have. This is all I got today. This is the moment where I remind you that in the description you can find, I have the new Telegram channel where you can join, and I'm doing seminars on the Law of One. I have also some talks and meditations that we're going to do over, again, everything's on Telegram. That's the channel where I can just post and keep in touch with you guys who are interested in this path particularly. And of course, we have this vocabulary of the Law of One, which we can talk about in the seminars, and we have the practice, which is the direct path, which I'm doing openly for more people to get into the way I do it. That is meditation, investigation into the nature of our being, so we can derive that harmony that is present there. We can talk about all of this. This is the path that we're interested in, and this is my gift to you openly as an extension of what I do here on YouTube, Spotify, and all the other platforms. Instagram is where you can contact me if you want to talk about my mentorship, which is what I give, is what I do, is my service. So if you want to talk about that, go on Instagram, shoot me one of those DMs, and we'll talk about that. If you're interested in the direct path, the course is in the description as well. Many people have taken it, and the results are beautiful because they don't need my assistance there. It's just one single teaching, and there are meditations in there. It's very complete. If you have any questions about that, also shoot me a message on Instagram. That's it. Self-promotion over. Session 99 over. We're getting into the three digits. Session 100 next time. I hope you're well. Have a good day or good night, whatever you are. And I'll catch you on session 100 of the Law of One.